Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. Every company has a story to tell, from the small startup to the large enterprise, and everything in between. This is one of them. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Marco.
Sean.
We're at the center of somewhere.
At the center of what? The universe? You need some astronomy
That's
class?
The perfect spot to be, I think.
I like to very, think very that I am at the there. Center of everything, don't we?
It's excellent there, I hear.
What makes something excellent, though?
That's the question. And maybe it's a definition of your own excellence that if you achieve it, it's excellent. Who knows? But that's what we're going to talk about today. And
I'm already confused, so I hope you have some good guests.
I know. I'm easily confused as well. And thankfully, we do have some good guests with us. We have Maggie Swearingen and Josh Waldo from Protivity and Nintex, respectively. And we're going to talk about centers of excellence and automating business processes in a meaningful, productive, effective, efficient way, I suspect. And
in an excellent way.
An excellent, ultimately excellent way, yes. So let's hear from our guests, who they are, what they're up to, their roles in this crazy world we live in, starting with you, Maggie.
Hi, my name is Maggie Swearingen. I am an associate director here at Protivity, and I am also our national Nintex partnership lead. So I've been working with our Nintex partnership here for over a decade, and it's fantastic to be invited to join you today.
Fabulous. Great. Glad to have you on. And Josh, what are you up to?
Yeah, so Josh Waldo, Chief Customer Officer at Nintex, basically responsible for what we call our customer success initiative. So really helping customers after they've purchased our technology, use it, adopt it, work with some of our great partners like Protivity to make things happen. And as a result, we get exposed to a lot of really cool customer stories, really interesting trends in the industry around, you know, process management, process automation, all that kind of thing. So thanks for having us.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. And to me, the most interesting stories are those where a problem is being solved, right? And it's great. We can build technology, we can build processes, and we can throw a bunch of people at something. But it's when all that stuff comes together and the light shines on something we achieve that it gets really fun. And I suspect we're going to talk a lot about those. So we were joking a little bit as we got into this about what is excellence and what is a center of excellence. And I suspect, and I'm going to ask each of you to define what a center of excellence is, but I suspect it's different perhaps for everybody. I don't know. Maggie, you want to kick it off? What's a center of excellence?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think I've worked with a lot of organizations to set up a centers of excellence in the past few years. And I think it is different for every organization. It really comes down to the people that you include. And you want to have, I think the best ones have a breadth of experience across the organization. So the center of excellence shouldn't live in one department. A center of excellence that's completely housed in the IT department, for example, because they own a lot of technology, they probably own the automation in this example, you know, that's not going to be a center of excellence that probably thrives. So what I always work with my clients and tell them is that the best ones include a broad spectrum of the business. And because you want those different perspectives, those are going to get you the voices that you need and ultimately get you the champions that you need later on as you're growing this and making it really a staple of your organization as opposed to something you just stood up one time, for example.
Yeah. And Josh, your perspective on this or your definition of it, my view is it's a company-wide product/program management group.
Yeah.
So what are we trying to achieve and how are we going to get there?
Yeah. And that's very altruistic way to look at it. And I think that's when you start getting towards the ultimate kind of goal of what a COE or a center of excellence is. I mean, like if you step back for a little bit and you look at some of the what organizations used to call these initiatives or organizations that were responsible for process improvement? Ultimately, you know, why would you establish something called a center of excellence, and it's ultimately to improve processes, to make your company more competitive, and to be able to do that in a sustainable way, kind of similar to what Maggie said, where she said, hey, it's not just a one-off solution that we need to develop to improve some one-off process that's broken. It's really around a steady stream of process improvement to increase the capability of the overall company or organization. And I think you know, these teams used to be called operations, you know, like it, right? Like sales operations used to be called sales operations. Now it's called sales excellence, right? So we've really replaced that term operation with the word excellence, because operations is kind of boring, right? And excellence is really exciting, and it's what we're all striving for. And I think we see various versions of what these things look like. And if you ask customers, and, you know, Maggie and I both talk to customers, you know, on a weekly basis, and, you know, and this topic comes up all the time, because you start to see similar characteristics of how these groups are operating. And they might not be totally organized the same way. In many cases, they're not. But they usually refer to themselves or the initiative that they're working on as a center of excellence, because they're trying to do something more strategic than just improve one process or automate one solution or build a mobile app or whatever it happens to be. It tends to be very tactical, where COE attempts to be, or it aims to be, more strategic to improve how an organization or a company works.
Yeah, it's almost make me laugh, because if you use common sense, you would think the entire business, in order to succeed, need to be excellent. And it's the sum of its parts. It's not that you can say, well, we have an excellent this, but we suck at doing this other thing. How is that going to work in the global general value that the business is going to deliver? And I think that when you talked about developing and improving automated system and operational system, you can't just look at one thing and make something excellent and something else below excellent. Doesn't really make sense, right?
Yeah, it's not like it's not like you're going to go out and strive to make something mediocre.
That's my goal.
A center of mediocrity, even though that might be the case in some cases, right? Call it excellent.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't do it purposefully, hopefully, but that doesn't mean we're not forced to make decisions and trade-offs and prioritize things, right? So I'm wondering, Maggie, how do organizations determine which ops become centers of excellence, and how do they begin to define those? Is it bottom-up driven? We have some problems here. Let's establish a center of excellence, or we want to start fresh with something and define what excellence means and figure out a way to achieve that? How do companies do it?
It all really comes down to what's strategically driving you as an organization. You know, if you are an organization that is struggling with myriad problems, then you're probably going to come out of that place of problems. If you're an organization that, you know, things are relatively smooth, they're going the way you want, but you have goals that you're striving toward, you know, then I think the center of excellence is going to grow out of that. When centers of excellence really take root in an organization, it tends to be deliberate at first and then incredibly organic from there on out. It really becomes a sort of grassroots experience that people at the organization are striving to achieve. I've been working with one group a lot lately, and that's really how it started out. They stood up a very, very deliberate, it's actually an office. I mean, it is a program office toward process mapping and down the road automation. And, you know, it was three people in the office. And over the course of the last 3.5 years, they've grown to a team of 51 leaders in their organization that meet monthly, that talk about process, that talk about automation, that talk about the standards that their organization is trying to hold up But they didn't recruit these 55 people from day one. These 55 people came to them over the course of the last 3.5 years when they came in contact with a great experience because Department A had gone through this. Oh, wow, that's awesome. We want to do that too. And, you know, so I do think there's tends to be a deliberate sense from the get-go, but beyond that, when you really are achieving something, it's because it's grown organically and people have adopted that as a part of their philosophy, as opposed to something that they just have to do.
It comes down to culture many times. You know, like when you make something your own, part of the organization, it becomes part of your culture, like cybersecurity, like diversity, for example. So it's business value. When you think in a certain way, you probably also look for people as you're growing the business that are thinking the way that you think, so that you don't just force them to be something that they're not. So it's that synergy and organic function of the business that is really important. And Josh, I'm wondering sometimes when you think in this way, again, let's go back to, you can't just look at one part of the business and say, let's create automation, let's create process in a certain way without involving everybody else. But there is a lot of truth in between, right? There is the company that you can use in an ideal and the Wild West of it's a mess. So bring us some examples, some things that you have seen in the past.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have, by the nature of what we provide, you know, workflow automation, process mapping, all that kind of thing, we do encounter quite a few customers and a lot of different variations on the topic. A couple of customers come to mind in Europe, very large organizations, where essentially, you know, the IT organization is responsible for a lot of the technology that people use to do this kind of work. Had automated a number of point solutions using our technology and other technology that they have, you know, licensing to and whatnot. And you know, as IT has always attempted to serve the business, right, as a shared service typically, but very reactive, these organizations really decided to get on their front foot and be more leaders to the business, because the demands of the line of business, regardless of the department, whether it's finance, HR, you name it, the demands that they had on IT were just creating these massive bottlenecks. And this is just the classic thing we hear all the time. Yet there's all this technology that's out there that's available to the business now that they can license directly via cloud services, or that they can procure, or that they can leverage through IT to solve their own problems, you know, whether they're simple problems or even slightly complex problems. And a lot of these lines of businesses have operational teams that, you know, super users and folks that aren't necessarily developers, but can do a lot of these things, and then lean on partners as well to make things happen. But that also presents a challenge for IT. So a lot of our customers, two in particular that I'm thinking of in Europe, have decided very intentionally to build out a COE so that not only can they manage the mission critical applications that the business requires and has SLAs on and all kinds of, you know, requirements on IT on, but that they can then enable the LOBs to solve their own problems with a certain amount of governance so that they protect the business from themselves, but also enable them. And we call that kind of a, you know, there's various approaches. And you mentioned Wild West versus a centralized approach. So we've got three essentially that we talk about, which is, you know, centralized, highly centralized approach, a decentralized approach, or a hybrid approach. And most of the organizations that we work with are really using that hybrid approach. They have a heavy focus on scaling through the business. They have a focus on governance and enablement and then support to the business. And there's a certain tier of application that IT then handles. And there's a certain tier of automation that they'll let the business run on their own. And we've got some customers. I got another customer in the US in the pharma side of things, which is obviously a real hot topic these days. They have, you know, over 3,500 essentially applications, but it's all disseminated through the business. It's very similar to what Maggie was talking about, where they have stakeholders in the business, they have super users through the business who all know how to use this low-code technology to automate processes and just make them more efficient. And then IT does their best to enable those folks, and they do their best to provide enough governance so that it's rational and it's healthy for the business. So anyways, these three approaches tend to align to the maturity of a business and their ability to adapt to whatever model that's required. So in some cases, I mean, I would say a centralized approach is appropriate just based on the maturity of the business and the ability for departments to work together. And then in other cases, I think, and which is more common, is more of a hybrid model where it's a bit of both. It's a bit more decentralized and they're focused on scale.
Yeah, and Maggie, I don't know if you have some stories to share as well, but I'm wondering who's on these teams, the Center of Excellence, because it almost seems like it's a customer satisfaction role for the company, right? The company, the business is the customer, and this group is designed to ensure that all their needs are met in a good way. And I'm wondering, is there an architect involved? Are there business owners involved? Who's part of this to kind of achieve what Josh is talking about, which is bringing efficiencies and automations to things that matter, but in a way that doesn't put the company at odds with itself, what it's trying to accomplish?
Well, it definitely helps if you're awesome. So that's the first thing, is you have to be really cool to be on a center of excellence. No, but kidding aside, you do want to have some people in your organization who are influencers. You know, I mean, I know that's a phrase now, or, you know, word of 2021, but you got to have those people who everybody listens to. And I don't care if you're 13 or 63, you know, everybody has those people that they kind of are like, that person, I'm going to do what they do. I'm going to model what I do after them, because what they do is so awesome, or the way they do it is so awesome. So, you know, high school never goes away in some cases. So you got to have those people, and you know who they are. I mean, I think the four of us right now could think of three people who are in our workplace who fit that bill.
I was just doing that even before you said that.
Right?
Different people, so, different places I've worked. Yeah.
You know who those people are. Those are the people who you need to recruit. Now, of course, there's the, you know, you want a technical architect. You need executive buy-in. Of course, you got to have those people included. But you also just got to have those people who people want to model themselves after them, because they see that success. They see, you know, whatever's happening in that business unit is happening and it's going well. Our business unit needs to model ourselves after that. So I think that those are the types of people you want to recruit for this. I think it's funny. At Protivity, we started a center of excellence in user experience about 7 years ago now, and it was only me and my colleague in it. So you can imagine it wasn't as much a center of excellence as the two of us just saying, like, well, gosh, how do we grow user experience here? You know, how do we make people care about this? And, you know, I think about it now, and we have 7 years later, we have incoming consultants right out of college who are emailing the two of us. I don't even know where they're getting our information or finding out who we are, just saying, like, user experience is so awesome. Can we find a way to be included in your group? Just invite us to meetings. We'll come to them and hear what you have to say, you know? And I don't, that's not to say that I'm that awesome person that they recruited, but I think it does say something about just the types of people you include. You want to have people who are inclusive and who really want to improve and grow things at your organization. I mean, the value proposition for process mapping, for example, is not, I mean, you don't have to have a master's degree to understand that, right? But to buy into the pain of actually doing it, that's a whole different story. So,
yeah. And Josh, I want to hear from you on this point, because I'm also picturing we had Skunkworks projects and Tiger Teams and these people that Maggie's referring to that I can visualize in my own mind from places I've worked. You wanted to be part of those things, those projects that they were working on. And so how do, and maybe even very specifically, how do you and Nintex and then with Protivity as well, help a company get beyond, we need to improve efficiencies. Here's a program. You will achieve X number of objectives with this and versus.
Maggie touched on it a bit. You know, there are certain key elements to being truly successful in a very mature way with things like mapping processes, automating processes. Now, those tend to be somewhat outcome, you know, statements, but you know, what's the real problem we're trying to solve here? And I can tell you what we're, you know, I'll air some of our own laundry, so to speak, in Nintex. You know, we've got this role called a Pro Master. So it's an established full-time FTE role. And it's called a Pro Master because we sell a tool called ProMap that allows a company to understand their processes, map and manage their processes, right? And we do a lot of acquisitions. So we bought 4 companies since I've been here. I've been here 6 years. We bought 3 companies in the last 3 years. And anytime you acquire companies and you bring them in, all that integration work adds new processes. You know, you've got a lot of tribal knowledge around the company. And if you were to walk in and ask the CEO, hey, you know, Eric, point to me where all your processes, do you understand all your processes? Of course, any CEO or executive in the company would say, well, depends what you're looking for, right? And we've got a lot of customers, you know, one that we got a case study on in New Zealand accident. Insurance corporation, known as ACC, that provides all the basically insurance across New Zealand for disability and things like that. Anyways, these guys were looking for one version of the truth on their processes. So it's just like I'm starting with just understanding with what your processes are, and that may sound trivial and easy, but it's really not because processes are embedded in people. Their tribal knowledge, in some cases are repeatable, sometimes they're not. And here at Nintex, of course, we have the same issue. So we took one of our consultants who does a lot of training for customers on, you know, building centers of excellence and all that kind of thing. And we put her into a full-time role as a Pro Master for Nintex. It's sponsored by our CEO. So it's important enough that our CEO says, this is important. I'm the executive sponsor. And anytime you see these examples of customers where they're doing pretty amazing COE structure and work, it's because the top executives behind it put their stamp of approval on it. They've put wood behind the arrow by hiring somebody in one of these types of roles where it's called a Pro Master or you name it. And there is a formal structure for the company, stakeholders in different departments that are responsible. But then like what Maggie said is so true. You've got to, that's got to permeate into something that everybody wants. And I don't know too many people in organizations that don't shake their heads or roll their eyes at certain processes that are broken that they wish were fixed. But if you create a COE in the right way, like a lot of our joint customers do, Protivity's customers, Nintex's customers do, is you create this culture, like you were talking, I think you mentioned it, Marco and Sean, that there's this culture of process improvement. People get passionate about it. I'm like really passionate about it, like crazy passionate about it, because they want these processes to work better because they get so frustrated when they don't. And if you give people the platform in order to do that, then they can be part of that virtuous cycle. And it just creates a better culture of empowerment where the business can help itself. And I think that's the ultimate goal of a COE.
So as we talk about all this process, everybody gets excited and everybody wants to automate everything. And it's kind of like the solution to everything. But what if you get trapped and you get too excited and you're going to automate the bad stuff? So whose role is and how you, Maggie and Josh on your different department come in and talk to the client, consult the client, say, let's do one step at a time. Let's not macro the bad things. Let's not automate bad stuff.
Well, I'm the pusher. I'm the person who comes into the meeting and I say, you know, do we have to do it that way just because we've always done it that way? And, you know, I can think of one example right now. I'm working with a client and they have a very complicated process that we're automating. And part of the process is that information comes in through a PDF. And there's a bunch of ways you can scrape that information, but we're limited based on the governance of the organization, what tools we can use. And that's fine. But I think, you know, when push comes to shove, when we really talked about it, and I said, finally, can we get this information any other way? Turns out we can get that information other ways, ways that were going to be easier ultimately to automate. But the business had never thought of that because they just always got it from the PDF and they never really considered the other options. So I think, you know, even a small example as that, I mean, that's still information we need. It doesn't necessarily speak to your kind of bad process automation, but just always asking the question, do we have to do it this way just because we always have, is a really, really valuable question to ask.
And that's the easy way, right, Josh? It's so easy to say, well, I've always done it this way. So
yeah.
Why not?
No, Maggie's example is perfect because, I mean, you can already think of a better process, right? You know, why are you making people fill out a PDF in the first place, right? Why not put a form on a website, have that go through, you know, the logic of a workflow and update systems of record and output whatever it is that that, you know, form was aimed at, you know, the output for the customer, the partner, that's a better experience for that individual who went through that process. But I think, you know, as technology is so available and so powerful, there's so much you can do with it, but you can almost, like you're indicating, you can almost perpetuate a bad experience and just make it even, I guess, more efficient or just perpetuate it even more. You know, I think you see that a lot with things like RPA, robotic process automation. You know, people throw RPA at kind of silly processes and they just take the humans out of it. But the process is still kind of silly, right? Where they're not like necessarily within workflow or you're redesigning that process and trying to make it better. Now, the best way to handle these things is to find the right technology to solve the right problem and to be thinking through what should that process really be. Now, a lot of companies don't have the luxury of redesigning every process and making it perfect. So, you know, in all fairness, throw RPA at a bunch of problems that and take humans out of the equation and put them on more important things that's going to be more fulfilling for the organization and let that stuff run. Prioritize those processes that are really important for the customer, partner, or employee experience and knock those things down in priority order through your center of excellence, mind you, and then get to those kind of silly processes, redesign them when you can prioritize them, right? So there's a good way to use all this technology, and a good consultant like Protiviti will, you know, help you walk through those kinds of things, right? My point is the technology is so powerful. You can do all kinds of things, but all kinds of things aren't necessarily good for your organization.
Absolutely. For me, Sean, is like the moment of pause before you make this big change, and it's a good time to clean up and just move forward with what's really your focus.
Yeah. And I think, and maybe as a closing comment here, Maggie can comment on this. Just because we're talking about where you can eliminate the human, and with that, hopefully eliminate human error. But and automating processes, we're talking about perhaps automating human error in a machine way, right? So, I guess, Maggie, how do you get companies to figure out that keep the human where they're needed, manage the process automatically where it's possible, but do it in a way that keeps human error out of it all the way through and perhaps reduces some of the risk along the way?
Someone that I was talking to recently, and I'm going to paraphrase this and probably butcher it, but I thought he had a great comment. It was that automation is not a substitution for good management. And I think that that, I mean, I really think that that sums it up. I mean, you can take humans out of the equation because their human resource is better used elsewhere. But at the end of the day, there still has to be solid management, oversight, and strategy. Otherwise, you're not going to get the return on investment.
Yep. And that takes us full circle back to what is a center of excellence? What is excellence? And I think that's different for each organization and what they're trying to accomplish. And I think the other thing we noted here is that it's not something that can be forced. It's something that has to be fun and cool and enabled by a culture of wanting to achieve something excellent. And again, purposefully looking at what's what, where's where, who's who, and why does all that matter, and how does it come together? So
you just cannot sell the same thing to everybody saying this is the best thing you can do. It depends on what you do. What is excellent for you may be horrible for me. You're not judging
the between A to Z.
You're not judging the intelligence of a fish the way you climb on a tree, as they say. To everybody his own.
Exactly. So I think there are probably a gazillion more stories we could hear from both you, Maggie, and Josh, how you help companies establish their own centers of excellence and achieve automation where it's appropriate and to gain those efficiencies and reductions in costs and expenses and whatnot. So thank you for sharing your insights and some of your stories with us.
Thanks Sounds so good. Much for inviting us.
Thanks for having us.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and the story made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.